أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وبه نستعين، إنه خير ناصر ومعين. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، ولعنة الله الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين، من ليلتنا هذه إلى قيام يوم الدين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. My respected elders, brothers and sisters in Islam and Iman, Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tonight is the night of Ashura. Many centuries ago, on this night, there was an extremely moving and beautiful scene unfolding in the desert of Karbala. You know, they say that a painting is worth a thousand words. And there are some paintings that we have that have been done by artists who try to depict some of the scenes from convey much more than a thousand words. You've all seen the painting of the horse, and you've seen the painting of the baby. But sometimes I wonder that why don't they, perhaps there is such a thing, but I haven't seen it, why don't they make a painting of the night of Ashura? After being in the desert for so many days, after the water supply being cut off or reduced from the seventh day of Muharram, you can imagine the state of the children on this night. We're told that they were crying, wailing out of thirst. The mothers were trying hard to keep them quiet and somehow give them some comfort and relief. But all of you know what it's like to try to comfort a baby that's hungry and thirsty. But what's amazing about this scene is that the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, at this time, when all odds are against them, they are spending the night in the worship of Allah. According to history, what happens is that the enemy army actually wants to attack on the Tasu'a today. They want to put an end to it. But when Imam Hussein alayhi salam becomes aware of their intentions, he sends his brother Abbas to delay them. What does he tell Abbas alayhi salam to tell them? He says that, "Go to them, O my brother, and see if you can delay this. Because tonight I wish to spend this night in prayer. لَعَلَّنَا نُصَلِّي لِرَبِّنَا اللَّيْلَةَ وَنَدْعُوهُ وَنَسْتَغْفِرُوهُ فَهُوَ يَعْلَمُ أَنِّي كُنْتُ قَدْ أُحِبُّ الصَّلَاةَ لَهُ وَتِلَاوَةَ كِتَابِهِ وَكَفْرَةَ الدُّعَاءِ وَالْإِسْتِغْفَارِ." O Abbas, go to them and get a respite so that we can spend this night in prayer, in salat, and we can call to Allah and make dua to Him and seek forgiveness for Him. Because He indeed knows that I have always loved salah and reading His book and making plentiful dua and making plentiful istighfar. So here you have this scene of people who have certainty that tomorrow will be their last day, but yet they're busy engaging in calling upon Allah with thirsty mouths. What a beautiful scene. Just imagine what your master Imam Hussein, what sort of munajat would he be engaged with on tonight? What sort of du'as would Abbas be reciting? Where would Qasim be? Where would the companions be? Would Habib be near Imam Hussein, or would he be near Abbas alayhi salam? What sort of groups would they be forming? We're told that some of them would be seen in qiyam, some of them in ruku, some of them in sujood. And there would be a humming coming from that camp. فَلَهُمْ دَوِيٌ كَدَوِيَ النَّحْلِ. There was a humming like the humming of bees as they were all busy, engaged in calling upon their Lord. That scene of beauty, that scene of worship, that scene of light was something that was attractive to even the enemy. When they saw that these were the types of people that they had been told were enemies of the state, they realized that something was wrong. According to some reports, 32 men from the enemy army crossed over and joined the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam on that night. Why? Because they were attracted by the power of worship of these beings. Brothers and sisters, as we saw, what Imam Hussein alayhi salam wanted to do this night was to engage in calling upon his Lord. One of the things that he wanted to do was to seek forgiveness from Allah. Over the course of these nights, what we've been doing is taking some lessons, some practical lessons from life, from the ziyarah of Ashura. Different lines have given us inspiration. Inshallah, all of us have taken something from this incredibly powerful and rich text that we can take and apply to our lives. Whether it be on our families, whether it be in our relationships with others, whether it be dealing with the society in a way that we hold our heads proud of our faith and not bow down to any sort of oppression and attack on what we believe. There's one line that I would like to cover for tonight, which is related to what Imam Hussein and his companions and family are engaged in doing tonight. In this ziyarah towards the end, we make this dua: Allahumma ja'alni fi maqami hadha mimman tanaluhu minka salawatun wa rahmatun wa maghfira. O Allah, make me be in this position among those to whom reaches your blessings and your mercy and your forgiveness. We're praying for a special position in front of Allah where to us reach these three things: His blessings, His mercy, and His forgiveness. Now you'll notice that there's a correlation here. Here we're asking for forgiveness, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam is asking for forgiveness as well too. He's doing istighfar. So what I'd like to do tonight is to talk about this concept of seeking forgiveness from Allah. And this question that perhaps has always been in our minds: why is it that Imam Hussein and his companions are busy doing this tonight? What do they seek forgiveness for? Is it, na'udhu billah, the case that they have committed some sins and they want to seek istighfar for them? What is it that's propelling them to want to engage in worship on tonight? Inshallah, we'll start with your help of a loud salawat. Brothers and sisters, when you look at this world is built on a system of causes and effects. You do something and you see the effect of it. And this is something that everyone accepts, that there are certain things, you do them and you see the effect of them. For example, let's say that you go and exercise, you get a workout, and you do that every single day. Right? You hit the gym, you go running, you play sports. Okay, if you do that and you do it regularly, the effect of it is that you're going to have a healthy body. And that's something which pretty much is the case, that's the way it works. Another example, if you work hard and you don't be lazy, then generally speaking, good things happen to you, right? If you don't slack off, you do your homework, right? You're diligent, you follow up, you make use of your time, you have some time management, you plan your day, you have a balanced life, you follow up, then in generally speaking, you tend to be successful, you accomplish your goals. That, again, is something that everyone accepts. Everything, every action that we have has a certain effect. Islam and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam understood this, and they encouraged us to understand this, the relationship between a cause and effect. In both of these examples that I gave you, I'm leading up to something here, so I would ask you that you follow along here. In both of these examples that I gave you, the Ahlul Bayt, they recognize this and they encourage this as well too. Exercise, for example, is something that the Ahlul Bayt encourage us to do. They also knew that it would help us, it would make us healthy. But they gave us a reason for why we want to do that, and they told us how we should do it as well too. They told us that when it comes to your body is an amana, it's a trust from God. You're going to be asked as to how you use it. So use it wisely. Because one day you have to restore and return this amana and you'll be questioned about it. So do exercise. Make your body healthy so that you can worship Allah even better. When it came to not being lazy and being focused, they told us work hard. In the ahadith we're told that Allah despises and loathes that servant of His who is farigh. Allah loathes the servant who doesn't have anything going on. Just passes his time, no plan, no sort of schedule, just wastes his time, is lazy. They told us in so many traditions about not being lazy, about managing your time. They told us what we should be focusing on. Why? Because they wanted us to use this gift of time in a way that would be serving Allah and make us successful in the hereafter. For every cause, there's an effect. The Ahlul Bayt recognize this. Now when it came to these two examples that I gave you, exercising and not wasting time, being focused, these are things that everyone agrees upon, whether you're a Muslim or not a Muslim. But brothers and sisters, the Ahlul Bayt and the Qur'an come and they give us a whole set of other actions that have effects that nobody except for a believer has access to. What is the topic of this whole series? It's about adopting an Islamic lifestyle. If we want to have an Islamic lifestyle, we have to understand what these actions are as well, and what sort of effects they are going to have for us. What is it that distinguishes us from people who don't have iman, who don't have faith? Example. One of the things that only a Muslim will engage in is something called doing wudu. Doing wudu. Washing your face and your hands and wiping your head and your feet. The simple act. Have you ever thought about what is the effect of this action when it comes to our life? Of course we know that it is something which is a necessary prerequisite for certain actions like touching the Qur'an, like saying our prayers. But have you ever considered the effects that it has in our lives
if we have wudu. In one hadith, the sixth Imam alayhi salam tells us, "Inni ajabtu mimman ya'khudhu fi hajatin wa huwa ala wudu'in kayfa la tuqda hajatuhu." I wonder at the one who has a need and enters into trying to fulfill that need in the state of wudu, how his need is not taken care of. What does that mean? Simple English, what does it mean? It means that the Imam is saying that if somebody is in wudu, he wonders, he would be very surprised if they try to accomplish something and it doesn't work out for them. You see, brothers and sisters, for every action there's an effect. The effect of being in wudu is not just limited to something in the hereafter. It's something that's related to this world right here. If you want to find success in a job interview, in an exam, in trying to accomplish something, trying to take care of some problem, then this is a lifeline that the Ahlul Bayt have given to you. They say, make use of this to find success in your life. Every action has a reaction. Every cause has an effect. Another example. Giving sadaqah, giving charity for the sake of God. Giving charity is supposed to be part of the lifestyle of a mu'min. Every day we're told that we should set aside some charity. Even if it not be a lot, a dollar, a couple of dollars, depending on whatever we can do, a quarter if it need be, a dime. But I should set aside some amount of charity on a daily basis and see what sort of effect it has in my life. Every action has a reaction. What does the verse of the Quran say? Surah Talaq, verse number 7. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وَمَنْ قُدِرَ عَلَيْهِ رِزْقُهُ فَلْيُنْفِقْ مِمَّا آتَاهُ اللَّهُ لَا يُكَلِّفُ اللَّهُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا مَا آتَاهَا سَيَجْعَلُ اللَّهُ بَعْدَ عُسْرٍ يُسْرًا. Here, brothers and sisters, the Ahlul Bayt have given us another lifeline for success in our worldly affairs. If you are in a tight situation, you're being pressed, you don't know where to go to, you're feeling impoverished, then give charity. Give charity. Sometimes the companions would come to the Ahlul Bayt, they would complain about how poor they are, and the Ahlul Bayt would say, okay, go and give charity. They'd be like, what? Did you hear me? I said I'm poor, I don't have anything to give. They would say, no, give charity. Sometimes they would refer to this verse, which says that if you are in tight straits, then give charity. If you do so, then what's going to happen? سَيَجْعَلُ اللَّهُ بَعْدَ أُسْرٍ يُسْرًا. After a difficult period, you will find ease. See, these are things, these are lifelines which are available only for believers. These are special set of things. Right? There's the other set of actions that everyone knows about, where Islam and the Ahlul Bayt come, and the Quran comes and gives us direction for them, tells us the best way of doing them. But there are certain things which are exclusive for believers. And that one action which is exclusive to believers that I want to talk about tonight is the action of istighfar. Brothers and sisters, somebody who wants to adopt a lifestyle of a believer needs to have istighfar be a core action that they do on a regular basis. Now, what is istighfar? Istighfar, very simply, is to seek forgiveness from God. To say, Astaghfirullah Rabbi wa atubu ilayh, but not just to say it, of course. Just mere words don't have the effect. It's coming with the belief in the heart that, oh Allah, I want you to give me your forgiveness. Maghfirah literally means to cover something. Oh Allah, that sin that I have committed, erase the effects away, cover it up, and make it be like the way it was before. This is istighfar. And when done properly, it comes along with an intention to rededicate my life to Allah. Now, once again, every action has a reaction. Every cause has an effect. What is the effect of doing istighfar? If I can please ask everyone to step forward, take a couple of steps forward with a loud salawat, please. Salli ala Muhammad. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
أحسنتم. One more loud salawat, please.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
There was a companion of our second Imam alayhi salam who one time was sitting near him. You see, the wise companions would take advantage of the opportunity to spend time with the Imams. We're told that spending time, even with an alim, is an ibadah. It can be a source of getting closer to Allah. We learn things by being in the company of the great ones. He was in the company of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. He sees that a man comes to him and complains of the drought. There's been no rain. He's a farmer. He needs rain for his crops. If he doesn't have crops, he's not going to have any money. The Imam alayhi salam tells him that go do istighfar. Go and ask Allah for forgiveness. The man goes away. Another man comes. He complains to the Imam alayhi salam. He says that I am poor. What can I do? The Imam alayhi salam tells him, go and do istighfar. A third man comes. He says that I have a problem. I want to have children, but I'm not being granted any children. What can I do? The Imam alayhi salam tells him, go and do istighfar. Now this companion who watched this happen, he asked the Imam, he says that, oh Imam, there was three people who came to you. All of them complained to you, but they all came from a different purpose and they complained to you about a different thing and you gave them the same answer. Why? Every action has a reaction, every cause has an effect. The Imam alayhi salam tells him that I didn't say this from myself. I said this based on what the Quran says. What does the Quran say? In Surah Nuh, verse number 10, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala quotes Nabi Nuh alayhi salam, A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. فَقُلْتُ اسْتَغْفِرُ رَبَّكُمْ إِنَّهُ كَانَ غَفَّارًا يُرْسِلِ السَّمَاءَ عَلَيْكُمْ مِدْرَارًا وَيُمْدِدْكُمْ بِأَمْوَالٍ وَبَنِينَ وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ جَنَّاتٍ وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ أَنْهَارًا. Nabi Nuh alayhi salam tells his people, do istighfar, seek forgiveness from Allah, from your Lord. Indeed, He is very forgiving. What's going to happen? What is the effect of that action? Again, this is exclusive knowledge, brothers and sisters. This is only for the believers. What happens? يُرْسِدِ السَّمَاءَ عَلَيْكُمْ مِدْرَارًا. Allah will cause the skies to come pouring down for you. This was for the man who complained about the drought. وَيُمْدِدْكُمْ بِأَمْوَالٍ. And Allah will increase you and help you with wealth. This is for the man who complained about poverty. وَبَنِينَ. And with sons. This is for the one who complained about having children. And Allah will give you gardens and paradise and place for you rivers therein as well. You see, brothers and sisters? With one action, there are at least three worldly effects of this. Abundant rain, wealth, and children. This is just the cause of, this is the effect of one cause, which is that of adopting istighfar in one's life, of seeking forgiveness from Allah. So, we can see that this act of seeking forgiveness is extremely important. And on this night, which is a night where we see that the Ahlul Bayt and the companions are busy, engaged in istighfar, we have to ask this question, how much is this part of our lives? One of the ways of knowing what sort of value the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, what sort of value the tragedy and their sacrifice has in our hearts, is to ask ourselves this question. That if we were told that we were going to die in a day, how would we spend our time? What would we be doing? One time, they went to a great alim. He was sick, he wasn't feeling so good, so he went to the doctor. They told him that, okay, you only have a few months to live. That's it, and then it's going to be over. This alim calmly takes the news. He goes back home. He tells his family and his friends that, okay, it's just a few months left. That's going to be it. So they ask him, they say that, okay, well, now that you know that, what's going to change? How are you going to change your lifestyle? He tells them that, actually, I'm not going to change a single thing. My whole life, I have planned it and I've dedicated towards this very moment. If I had to change anything, I would have changed it a long time ago. Exactly what I've been doing until now is exactly what I'm going to continue doing from now on. Whether it be 3 months, whether it be 3 days. Brothers and sisters, a life of istighfar, a life of seeking forgiveness, a life of salat, a life of reading Qur'an, this is what led those companions to do the same thing on that night of Ashura. So what is it that, why is it that I would want to do that? How can I go about doing so? We talked about how things have an effect. We saw how istighfar has incredible worldly effects on those who do it. Children and wealth. And by the way, I should mention here that we're told in numerous ahadith that if there's a couple who has issues, they're not able to have children, then one of the best ways of trying to open up the channels of rizq from Allah in this regard is to do istighfar. Do plentiful istighfar and see what happens. So these are worldly effects, but there's something more than that, brothers and sisters. The effect of istighfar isn't just related to the worldly things. And this is another case where a believer's life differs from a non-believer. You see, what we talked about so far, whether it be being healthy, whether it be being successful, having children, rain, all these things, these have to do with material things. But there's a whole set of immaterial blessings and gifts that are waiting for a believer. And if I want to have access to those things, I need to find the ways to do so. For example, having contentment in life, being happy, being satisfied, feeling a connection with the divine, feeling the presence of a living imam, these are gifts that are waiting for a believer. We just have to see what we can do to attain them. And one of the best ways of doing them and of getting these gifts is through this act of istighfar. So, brothers and sisters, how do we go about doing so? I just want to mention three levels of istighfar that we can, inshallah, benefit from tonight. The first one. Ulama tell us that if somebody wishes to do istighfar, to ask forgiveness from Allah, the first place they have to start it is when it comes to what they believe in. We are living in a society where there are incredible attacks on what we believe. There are many people who call themselves Muslim, who call themselves followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, but they don't realize that over the course of living here and being part of the system and going to the university as well too, that some of the fundamentals of our beliefs have become corrupted in some cases. For example, one of the beliefs of a Muslim should be that Islam is the truth. And Shia Islam is the truth with a capital T. Not that there are multiple truths, one among which is Islam. No, logically, if you talk to a child even and you ask them that, can it be the case that two things which are different, two beliefs that are different can both be true? They would say that doesn't make any sense. But in today's modern thinking, we're told to believe that no, there's multiple shades of gray. You can believe what you want and I'll believe what I want, and as long as we're happy with that and we're satisfied with that, that's all okay. But what did the Ahlul Bayt al-Islam tell us? They told us, شَرِّقَ وَغَرِّبَ لَن تَجِدَ عِلْمًا صَحِيحًا إِلَّا مَا خَرَجَ مِنْ عِنْدِنَا أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ. You can go to the east, you can go to the west, but you will not find any knowledge which is correct except with that which emanates from us, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. University students, we need to pay attention to this. The Ahlul Bayt have, and the school of the Ahlul Bayt have answers to every single misconception that might be out there. Every single thing has been explained in incredible detail. I remember having a conversation with a young man, a very good and pious and devout brother. He used to come to the centers, he was involved with the majalis, but one day they got to him. They started putting in these beliefs, making him question about the fundamentals of the belief. I remember him coming to visit me and he said that, okay, I have all these things and I haven't seen any answer to them in all the books that I've read. And he was convinced that he was right and everyone else was wrong. So I just posed the question to him. I said that, okay, well, what have you read? Right? So he started mentioning a few books that he had read from the internet. And I said, okay. And what languages do you understand? He said, I understand just English. I said, okay. So I started asking him, have you read this book? He said, no. What about this book? No. What about this book? Do you know this scholar, that scholar, this scholar, that scholar? Finally, he admitted that the access to knowledge that he had was very limited. He hadn't spent time with scholars. Eventually, he came to the Hawza and he started studying. And a few years later, he came to me and said that, brother, everything that I believed before, I realized that it was false. Every single misconception that I had in my mind, I found the answer to it in the Hawza. The modern questions, the modern challenges, the ancient challenges, every single one of them was found in the school of the Ahlul Bayt. The first level of istighfar, brothers and sisters, is to have istighfar in our beliefs. That what do we believe in? Do we believe in the hereafter? If we believe in the hereafter, then why is it that we sin? But if we really believe, right, that our Prophet came and he told the truth and there is heaven and there's hell, and we believe that he brought that religion which is a complete system of guidance, then why is it that I would ever imagine contradicting the law of God? Isn't that a sign that I need to do istighfar in my beliefs? That say, oh God, I'm so sorry. Oh Allah, this is the night of forgiveness. This is the night when Imam Hussein was seeking forgiveness. I ask your forgiveness for not believing in that truth which you sent to me by way of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
The second level of istighfar is when it comes to our actions, brothers and sisters. Tonight is the night for us to join those companions and the Ahlul Bayt as they are seeking forgiveness, and for us to do the same thing. Let us take this opportunity to seek Allah's forgiveness for those actions that we have committed that have created a distance and a barrier between us and Allah. Every action has an effect. Every sin has effect. This is again for those believers. We want to understand the way the world works. Every single action that we do has a spiritual effect on our heart. And the effect of a sin is destruction in that relationship we have with God. You see, brothers and sisters, sometimes, imagine, let me give you an example. You're talking to somebody far away on the phone. And sometimes there's a bit of friction on that line. The words don't come that clearly. Sometimes they get eaten up. If that friction gets to be too much and there's too much static, stop being able to have a conversation with that other person. Sometimes you tell them, you know what, it's not going to happen today. Let me try it at night, or let me try it tomorrow. Maybe things will be better. The lines will be clearer. The same thing happens when it comes to our relationship with Allah. You know this. We all know this. Sometimes we feel like we're close to Him. Sometimes we feel like we're retreating from Him. Sometimes that line is clear. We have that connection with Him. Sometimes it's very faint and there's a lot of static and friction. What is it that we can do to clear up that line? What we can do is turn to Allah and say that we're sorry for what we've done. And this is the night, brothers and sisters, to do this earnestly and sincerely. Sometimes people have a problem. They say that, okay, I will believe and I'll submit when it comes to most things, but there's one sin that I commit, that's my pet sin, and that I won't be able to leave behind. There's usually one thing or two things. Everything else I'll be a Muslim, but in this one thing, just don't come at me with that. It's my pet sin. Right? Whatever it is, maybe it's listening to haram music. Maybe it's looking at something which I shouldn't be looking at. Right? Whatever it is, everyone has their certain way that the shaitan attempts to get to them. How can I possibly leave aside this pet sin? Sometimes people get really, they get flabbergasted at the idea of leaving aside this one thing. Brothers and sisters, we have to ask ourselves, this is the night to question, that after all, what is it that's preventing us from making this decision to stop? We shouldn't think of it being something unsurmountable. It's true that once somebody gets used to doing something, it becomes a habit. And once it becomes a habit, it's very hard to break from it. But guess what? With the help of Allah, everything that can happen. With tawassul to the Ahlul Bayt, asking them for help, everything can happen. We have examples of young people who came to our Prophet and came to the Ahlul Bayt and they committed the worst of sins. Things that I can't even talk about in the minbar. But they found in our books of hadith. The word, you just imagine it, they used to commit it. And they would go and they would admit that to the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Would the Ahlul Bayt tell them that, oh, you know what, go away, there's no hope? Would they tell them that, no, this thing, now that you're stuck with it, that's it, that you can't get over it? Not at all. They would encourage them, they would turn to them. Sometimes we have examples where the Imam or the Prophet would touch that young man and that their lives would transform. Because after all, the only thing that's lying between us and between being a servant of Allah is us ourselves. And who cannot be a master of his own self? This is the night for us to, again, turn to Allah and ask. And commit ourselves to a life of servitude to Him. So that what I've mentioned is two levels of istighfar, two levels of seeking forgiveness. The third one I want to mention right now, one was when it came to belief, the other one is when it came to actions. The third is when it comes to our ethics. When it comes to the way we deal with people. We live in a society, brothers and sisters, where we're raised to be very sophisticated animals. From a very young age, again, I'm speaking from experience, seeing what sort of things happen in the public school. We're brought up in a culture where it's about my trying to show how much better than you. How much more can I brag more than you? How can we, let's get into something where you say something and I'll say something to try to make fun of you, you say something to try to make fun of me. Back and forth, calling each other names. It's all about me, it's all about trying to show how I'm the best. Is this the way that the Ahlul Bayt taught us to be? A life centered around I and the idol of the I and trying to make everything about what I believe? I walked into a public school just a few days ago and I saw right there in the first thing that you see a quote saying, the gist of it was something like this, that don't tell me what to do, I'll do whatever I want, I'm free. This is a type of ideology. And these are the type of ethics that our young people are being exposed to. But this isn't the way of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. There is one very special companion of our sixth Imam alayhi as-salam and our fifth Imam. His name was Muhammad ibn Muslim. Muhammad ibn Muslim was such a great companion that when he used to live in Kufa, and again the Ahlul Bayt used to live in Medina. Imam Sadiq alayhi as-salam and Abu Bakr were living in Medina. When people would come to Imam Sadiq and complain about the distance, they would say that we're leaving Kufa, we can't come and visit you in Medina. Every time we have questions, they would tell them, why don't you go to Muhammad ibn Muslim and ask him? Because he is somebody who's trustworthy, he's somebody that you can ask. He was a mujtahid of his time. He was a scholar. He was an eminent personality, he was well known. But one time, Imam Sadiq alayhisalam in Medina, as he's leaving Medina, the Imam tells him, oh Muhammad ibn Muslim, you need to be more humble. You need to be more humble. This is the way the Ahlul Bayt alayhisalam wanted us to be. How much of our actions, brothers and sisters, reflect humility, reflect the fact that we're a servant of Allah versus a servant of our own nafs. Muhammad ibn Muslim, when he gets this command from the Imam, he takes it very seriously. He goes to Kufa, there's a big mosque there, known as Masjid Kufa. He buys a basket of dates, and he goes to that door and he starts selling dates to people who are going in and out of the masjid. Now imagine, brothers and sisters, a great scholar going to the door of the center and selling dates to people coming in and out. Imagine that it's not just a great scholar, it's an ayatullah. Right? Would that be something? For the soul. But this is what he realized would be necessary in order for him to lower his ego. Afterwards, his family, his kin, his clan came to him and said that you're embarrassing us.
Right? Can't you do something else in this? He said that, no, my imam has told me I have to be more humble. This is the only way that I can make it happen. So they said that, okay, well, why don't you instead of selling dates, because date selling was considered one of the lowest occupations, they told him that instead, why don't you grind wheat and sell the flour? He said, okay, that's what I'll do instead. So you see, brothers and sisters, that one of the levels of istighfar that we have to do, that we have to be asking Allah for forgiveness for, is the way that we are, the way we behave. Sometimes somebody might get to the point where they think they have control over their actions. They think they got their actions in line. But then what about the way that they treat other people? Sometimes when you think about the way we treated our parents, the way that we've treated our children, our community members, we feel embarrassed. This is what we need to take to Allah when we ask forgiveness for Him. And one of the instructions that we have is that we should always be seeking forgiveness from Allah. وَبِالْأَسْحَارِهُمْ يَسْتَغْفِرُونَ. One of the qualities of a believer is that they are awake in the time before dawn. And what are they engaged in? They're seeking forgiveness from Allah. And the more we understand, brothers and sisters, the more awareness we have, the more we realize what it means to do a deed and to do something which is not pleasing to Allah, then the more serious our istighfar is going to be. There's a wonderful story we have of this one scholar by the name of Sayyid Shifti, who used to live in Isfahan some 100, 200 years ago. I remember my teacher mentioned this story many times to us. He really felt that there was a powerful lesson in that story. I want to relate it to you tonight. There was a great scholar who was renowned for many things, but one of them is that he had a very special relationship with Allah. His name was Sayyid Shifti. Another man reports that one morning, early in the morning, he makes his way to the bathhouse of Isfahan, and he passes by the house of Sayyid Shifti. He hears a sound coming from the house of this Sayyid. He goes near, he's curious to know what is it that he's saying repeatedly again and again. He hears that he's repeating the line, same line again and again and again. What is it that he's saying? He's saying, أَيُخَيِّبُ مِثْلُكَ مِثْلِي. Again and again. أَيُخَيِّبُ مِثْلُكَ مِثْلِي. أَيُخَيِّبُ مِثْلُكَ مِثْلِي. What does that mean, brothers and sisters? It means that, will someone like you disappoint someone like me? You see, brothers and sisters, now this is, I'm asking you to think a little bit here. What sort of position does this man have where the most greatest of his worries is being disappointed by Allah, and Allah, that connection between him and Allah being somehow severed, or there being some friction on that line? أَيُخَيِّبُ مِثْلُكَ مِثْلِي. Oh Allah, here I am asking for you to give me your special attention, for you to give me that confidence, that certainty, that mercy, that feeling of satisfaction. Will you disappoint me in this? That man who says that, he heard him repeating that, he says, I went to the bathhouse and 2 hours later I came back. It was still in the early morning before the Fajr prayer. I passed by his house, I heard the same sounds, I went and heard, he was repeating the same thing for 2 hours. أَمِثْلُكَ يُخَيِّبُ مِثْلِي. Will someone like you disappoint someone like me? Do you see now, brothers and sisters, why it's the case that Imam Hussein and Ali Salam and his companions and the family were so busy engaged in worship on this night, and one of the things they're doing is istighfar? Because they understand the value of this connection between us and Allah, and they want nothing to come in between. Every good deed that we do, brothers and sisters, it's because of the help of Allah. Let's not fool ourselves and think we have nothing to be sorry about in front of Allah. No, we have a lot to be asking forgiveness for. Our past sins, our current sins, our akhlaqi traits. Not to the point where we get so depressed when we think about the past that we're like, forget it. I'm not going to go anywhere. No. The worst sin that we can commit is to be hopeless. But let's not make excuses. And that's the last point I'll make before going to the masjid for now. Let's not make excuses for ourselves, brothers and sisters. You see, we live in a world today where
Wrong actions are justified with so many excuses. A nation will go and another nation, kill their children, and then they'll justify it by sending an aid. They'll be like, well, we'll bomb you, but then we'll send an aid for you as well too. We'll come and help reconstruct your cities after we bomb you. They'll make all sorts of wrong decisions, and they'll justify it by, in the name of democracy, in the name of humanitarian assistance. They make excuses. Let's not become like these dictators for ourselves. Sometimes we do the same thing, brothers and sisters. We commit a sin, and then we justify it, saying that, oh well, you know, after all, there's some time left in my life. There's some time left, eventually I'll come back, and I'll ask Allah for forgiveness, and He'll forgive me at that time. But let's not be fooled, brothers and sisters. There was somebody who had that same type of logic. His name was Umar ibn Sa'd, la'anatullahi alayh. What does Umar ibn Sa'd say? As he's making this decision whether or not he should participate in Karbala or not, he says in poetry, this famous lines, he says, يَقُولُونَ إِنَّ اللَّهَ خَالِقُ جَنَّتِي وَنَارٍ وَتَعَذِيبٍ وَغُلِّي يَدَيْنِي. They make this claim that there's Allah who's a creator of paradise and fire and punishment and the chains on the hands. Would that we would think this way. فَإِن صَدَقُوا فِيمَا يَقُولُونَ أَتُوبُ إِلَى الرَّحْمَانِ مِنْ سَنَتَيْنِ. If what they're saying is true, then okay. For 2 years, I'll engage in tawbah. I'll say that I'm sorry to God. وَإِن كَذَّبُوا فُزْنَا بِدُنْيَا عَظِيمَتِي. But if they're lying, then okay, well, I'll get great land, because he was promised the governorship of this entire province. I'll gain this great land, and I'll be the owner of that, and I'll be the king of that. وَمُلْكٍ عَظِيمٍ دَائِمٍ الْحِجْلَيْنِ. I'll be the king of this great land. You see how it is that this nafs can justify things for itself. Inshallah, I pray that this be a night for all of us to start afresh, to do istighfar, and to make that be one of the lifestyle habits that we a portion of our day, make our prayers serious, make our istighfar serious, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Tonight is the night of Ashura. Tonight we see that before this great act of this great display of servitude and worship, Imam Hussein alayhi salam gathers all of his companions together. He has something to tell them. What is he saying? He says, "Uthni ala Allahi ahsana thana." I praise Allah with the best of praise. And I praise Him in the times of difficulty and the times of ease as well. O Allah, I praise You that You have honored us with the prophethood, and You have taught us the Qur'an, and You have made us understand the deen, and You have given us ears and eyes and hearts. So make us thankful to You, O Allah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's thoughts are occupied with Allah on this night. He tells his companions, فَإِنِّي لَا أَعْلَمُ أَصْحَابًا أَوْفَى وَلَا خَيْرًا مِنْ أَصْحَابِي. I know no companions who are more faithful and better than my companions. What amazing companions they were. يَا لَيْتَنَا كُنَّا مَعَكُمْ فَنَفُوزَ مَعَكُمْ فَوْزًا عَظِيمًا. If only we were with you, Ya Hussein. We were with you, O Ashab of Hussein, on that night, and we too could have pledged our allegiance to you, just as we have pledged our allegiance tonight to the Imam of our time. He tells them that it is me that they want. You have fulfilled your pledge to me, I let you now go. But history tells us that not a single one of these companions goes. But rather we see this display of loyalty. The first among them to display his loyalty is Abbas alayhi salam. He pledges that he will stay with Hussein, and one by one all the family members, and followed by the companions. Among them is Zuhair ibn Qayn, who says that, by Allah, I wish that I be killed then brought back to life then killed again 1,000 times, so that Allah the Great
will let such in you and these youths from your Ahlul Bayt alive. Meaning to, for your sake, I would be willing to be killed 1,000 times, O Hussein. And the other companions, one time, one after the other, they do the same thing. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the morning of Ashura, he begins the day with a supplication. He talks to Allah, he says, Allahumma anta thiqati fi kulli kurbatin, wa anta raja'i fi kulli shiddatin. Oh Allah, you are my trust in every difficult thing, and you are my hope in every calamity that will come my way. Oh Hussein, what sort of calamities will come your way? This is the day, oh Hussein, where you will face so many scenes of pain. How is it that you bear them so patiently? One by one, he sees his companions, his dear friends, his dear Shia, be martyred with such blood and with such sacrifice. One by one, he sees them give their lives, and then comes a time for his family. There is that son, there is that nephew, there is so many of his close relatives, and finally there is his brother. When it comes time for his brother, he cries out, Al-an inkasara dhahri wa qallat hilati. But oh Hussein, there is still one more sacrifice. There is still one more sacrifice and one more bala and one more tragedy that you will have to bear. Where your trust in Allah is that which will keep you firm and steadfast. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. أيها المقتول بكربلاء عطشانا السلام عليك يا سفينة النجاة يا سيد الشهداء. Our salutations to Imam Hussein, who was slain on the plains of Karbala with a thirsty mouth. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, when he sees that all of his companions and Abbas and Ali Akbar and the male family members are no longer, he cries out so everyone can hear, هَلْ مِنْ ذَابٍ يَذُبُّ عَنْ حَرَمِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ هَلْ مِنْ مُوَحِّدٍ يَخَافُ اللَّهَ فِينَا هَلْ مِنْ مُغِيثٍ يَرْجُ اللَّهِ. Is there anyone who will come to the aid of the haram of the Messenger of Allah? Is there anyone who will give assistance who has hope in Allah? But who is there to come to assist him? There is no one left. He tells the enemy army, do you doubt that I am the son of your prophet's daughter? He brings so many arguments, but they are not willing to listen to the imam of their time. Instead, they make fun of him. They are rude to him. Imam Hussein alayhi salam goes back to the tent. Who does he see lying in the cradle? Yes, it is a baby, the 6-month-old son of Imam Hussein. Karbala has babies as well. This baby must have been so thirsty. Brothers and sisters, you know what happens when a baby is thirsty. It cannot contain itself. The cries must have been incessant. Imam Hussein alayhi salam has one more test. He has to see one more tragedy. He tells his sister, Zainab, oh Zainab, ناوليني ولدي الصغير حتى ودعا. Give me my young boy, this child, so
one report. He has the baby in his arms. There's one thing left for Hussein to do. He approaches the enemy army. He shows them the baby. Oh Hussein, don't you know that these men are so cruel, they don't know mercy. He tells them, Ya Qawmi, in lam tarhamuni, farhamu hadha al-tifl. If you got no mercy on me, then at least have mercy for this child. Brothers and sisters, you know that a baby has a special place in the hearts of everyone. A crying baby would awaken compassion in the hardest of hearts. There are some in the enemy army who are moved by this scene. How can they possibly be wanting to kill this grandson of the Prophet who is just a young, tender, and sweet baby? But Harmala, Arbala, La'anatullahi alayh will have nothing of this. He cocks his arrow to his bow. One moment, the cries of the baby must have filled the desert. Everyone must have been anxious to see what is going to happen. The next moment, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. The next moment, the cries have stopped. The baby is crying no longer. Imam Hussein alayhi salam cries out, Oh Allah, you be the judge between these people. They invited us and promised to help us, but now they are killing us. Something which even the people of the skies cannot bear. This is a tragedy which shakes the entire universe. Imam Hussein alayhi salam takes the blood of his young baby. He cups it in his hand and he flings it to the skies. He says, Hawwana alayya ma nazala bi annahu bi'aynillah. The only thing that makes this possible for me to bear is that it is in the presence of Allah. Suddenly a voice is heard from the sky consoling Imam Hussein. This is an event which requires supernatural intervention to console the Imam. The voice is heard, O Hussein, da'ahu fa'inna lahu murdi'an fil jannah. O Hussein, it is okay. There is someone who is going to take care of him in paradise. Imam Hussein is walking back with his 6-month-old child who has been struck with an arrow in the neck. What is he going to do with this baby? How can he possibly show Sukaina what has happened to her baby brother? According to one report, Imam Hussein right there and there, he takes his sword, he digs a small grave in the sand to bury the body of the 6-month-old infant. Perhaps he doesn't want to show Zainab or Rabab or Sukaina what happened. According to another report, the baby is buried with Imam Hussein, the same way that he is on the chest of Imam.